is Vacant Expressions, 1 hour of your life you will not get back, guaranteed. We are your hosts, Wesley and John Fox, here in the middle of January 2019. We weren't supposed to get this far. The Mayans told us we'd be dead and gone 7 years ago, but here we are. We made it, and we're here to talk for about an hour about a little bit of Oumuamua update, a couple quick hitters on a couple things going on in the world of nerdiness, and then, of course, I feel like we've gone too long without talking Star Trek, so we're going to do some of that. So
yeah,
that's the plan, and well, John, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing really good. Right now, I am drinking some loose leaf yerba mate tea that I made with a little bit of fresh lemon squeezed into it. It's delightful. If you've never drank yerba mate before, it is like a highly caffeinated green tea. The caffeine molecule is a little bit different than regular caffeine. Takes a little longer to break down, so you get kind of a really smooth, long-lasting caffeine experience. I highly recommend it, and it's really easy on your stomach if coffee ever upsets your stomach or is too acidic. I highly recommend yerba mate.
So how do you spell it?
I think it's yerbimati.
I'm gonna look into that because I am trying to cut back on coffee, and I can't do black tea. I realize that it kind of messes with me in ways that are not good. So I'm looking for an alternative.
It's yerbamate.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, so it's and get like the there's like the yellow brand or whatever. I can't pronounce the name of it. I'm just going to mess it up. But it's got a bunch of yellow branding on it and stuff. It's a popular one you can find in like convenience stores and stuff. And if you, at least in Denver, you're in Seattle, you could definitely find it in convenience stores out there. And then the loose leaf tea, if you get like a bag of it, it's like getting a bag of coffee. I make it in my French press. So I got a whole French press of this shit that I'm going to get all jacked on. Yes. And then I'm gonna fight it with some local organic Colorado herb. It's kind of a thing I like to do when I'm being productive is have yerba mate tea and high quality Colorado pot kind of fight each other out while I try to be productive. It's kind of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, this is this Pacific Northwest. We are all heavily hooked on caffeine, and the first drug of choice is coffee usually. And I still drink coffee. I love coffee, but I don't want to drink 3 cups of it a day. So I'm kind of looking to have like coffee in the morning and then in the afternoon have something like tea instead. I've just found that black tea kind of does not have the desired effect. It actually seems to like make me crash a little bit, and I don't know why, but green tea does not. So I was kind of hoping to find like, you know, knowing that there's like a super powerful green tea. Yeah, I want to try that.
No, it gets you jacked. It seriously does. Like you'll feel it, and then like your body processes it differently, and you'll be a little bit more have a lower tolerance to it. Even if you have a high tolerance to coffee, caffeine, like when you first have this, you're gonna be like, holy shit, I'm humming.
And the other thing that you turned me on to like over the holidays is kombucha that I've started.
Yeah.
As an experiment, I decided to start drinking in January for at least a month to see if I noticed a difference, because it's supposed to have a number of unique properties. And I'm about, let's see, 2 weeks in, 2.5 weeks. I've already had some kombucha today. And for the most part, like some of them, just like off the bat, I can tell you straight up, like some of them do taste like shit.
Like yeah.
Half of them.
They get acquired, or because they can get sour sometimes or vinegary.
Oh man, it's
like the homemade stuff. It doesn't always come out great when we make it at home. Like it's like, oh shit! Like this is probably really good for your gut. You can taste how good for your gut it is.
Oh my god, this has got to be good for you.
It just has to be. Please let it be good for me. Don't make me sick.
A couple of things I've noticed. One, there's a small amount of alcohol in it, but it's so small that it really should not have an impact because I only drink one a day.
That's trace amounts. You don't need an ID to buy it or anything, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But dude, I do feel a slight buzz with it, even though like the alcohol content's so low.
I think it's made with black tea, so I think there's a caffeine thing. There's a little bit of that, and it's just good for your gut. When your gut's like feeling better and stuff, you feel better. So, I don't know. Like if you're drinking it every day and everything, like Yeah, we probably shouldn't talk too much about gut health. That gets a little gross after a while, but it's good stuff, man.
Well, so far, like, I found a few that do taste pretty good, and I can, like, I can just chill and drink it and kind of relax. And it is, it's, like, totally low calories, and you got to find ones with, like, not a shit ton of sugar. So, like, I mean, there is, so that it's not like you can just grab any kombucha off the shelf and you're fine. Like, there's some crap out there, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And but I have found a few I can actually, you know, drink and actually enjoy drinking. I don't know, like, I do feel kind of different with it, but, like, I think it's too early to really say, like, to give, like, a full assessment as to what it's doing. So I'm going to keep drinking it, but there is definitely something going on. Because I do feel kind of different the last, like, week or two, and I don't, it does give me a little bit of a buzz, which is kind of cool, because it's a low alcohol content thing. So if I do go out driving and they ask if I've been drinking, you know, I can literally say no. And if they give me I can maybe say yes, and I'll blow like a 0.01, because this stuff has like, I think it's like 0.5% BAC.
It's like 0.05 or 0.5. Something pretty low. When you make it at home, though, you can make it more alcoholic from, you know, make it on accident sometimes. And you're like, oh, this kombucha is fantastic.
So I just wanted to share that because we were talking tea.
You're
doing your January cleanse, or not cleanse, what's it called?
Dry.
January dry.
Yeah, for the most part, I guess. I had drinks with my friends last night I shouldn't have. But kind of the goal this year is not to be completely dry all year, but just maybe go out like once a month. So I guess I use my one time up. Like next month it might be Valentine's Day if we choose to go out and have a drink or celebrate that. And month after that, maybe her birthday. Wow. So, but honestly, that ends up working out. The past couple weekends have been oddly fun and adulting and productive. It's usually not all those at the same time, so 30s are weird. Like Jesse was talking about, it's like, yeah, like having a conversation with someone about like really enjoying a cup of coffee, you know, like having that moment to enjoy a fresh cup of coffee. Like, oh my God, if I would have heard myself saying that 10 years ago. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I do love that some things have not changed. Like, I remember when we were younger, like, adults always used to tell us, like, yeah, you're going to have to get used to waking up early. You can't sleep in when you grow up. And, like, that's just going to be part of being adult. Like, now that I'm adult, I can wake up early and have coffee and get to work and I don't drag anymore. But on weekends, dude, I sleep in and I fucking love it. And that is something that
it's because all the adults that told us that had kids.
Yes, I think that's why. Because they're like, oh yeah, you'll never be able to sleep in ever again. I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, I have an idea.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, seriously, jeez.
So I'm not drinking kombucha. I did want to talk about that a little bit because I definitely am, and I'm not doing dry January. I'm doing dry February. So I am drinking Fat Tire Amber Ale.
Oh, fantastic. That's good.
I know. I should be drinking, like, Seattle area beers so that way I could share a little bit about local brews. But I honestly have been cutting back on beer. So, like, I know between everything you can drink, like, the lightest thing you could really drink is technically wine, but it's not by enough to make a difference, like, calorie-wise. Mm-hmm. And sugar-wise, I think.
No, the lightest thing calorie-wise is fucking moonshine, grain alcohol.
All right, yeah.
It's a fact.
Fair enough. Yes. clear liquors. Yeah, clear booze are usually the best. So, but beer, like, when I drink beer, I can keep drinking them. So, like, the calories will pile up.
It gets bad.
Whiskey and bourbon and all those stuff, like, even though it's only 2 or 3 or 4 ounces, like, it's loaded. So,
honestly, though, no, like, whiskey's like 64 to 70 calories per shot, per ounce and a half.
Per ounce and a half, but no, the normal pour is like 3 to 4 ounces, or 3 ounces.
Not at a bar, unless you're buying it double. But yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like, whiskey's not a bad choice, because there's very few beers that are, like, close to 100 and aren't awful.
The sugar content is higher than the other two, calorie-wise, actually, from what I read, like, what you would order in a bar is actually over 100. But, like, an ounce and a half, yeah, a serving, like an ounce, like a quick shot, yeah, you're probably, it's an ounce and a half, which is technically what a shot, one alcoholic serving should be, I think you're right. But
man, when we were in Iceland, they only pour you one freaking, I don't know how many milliliters it is or something like that, but it's pretty much just an ounce. Like, their shot glasses are small. We bought some. I'll show them to you. It's kind of a disgrace. And then they're like, you know, $15, $20 shots.
That's right. Like, when you're over there, you can order a liter cola.
Right. You can. You absolutely can.
You can get a 50 milliliter shot of whiskey and then get a liter cola. Yeah.
Ah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. But that was kind of a jip, and it was all like, man. And it's sea level for me, so drinking there is like, I mean, I guess when we were there, I hadn't like really had a drink in like 10 months, so everything like hit me. But
when you come here, that's going to be an issue because I am basically at sea level. So we'll have to go up Mount Rainier, like bring some whiskey. We'll go up Mount Rainier. We'll drink up there so you can feel closer to home.
All right. Yes. Feel closer to God. I like to drink on the top of a mountain so I can cheers to God.
You know what? I'm not a hiker and I'm not like a big, I'm not an outdoors person, but that sounds very appealing.
Isn't that inspiring? Isn't that what inspire you to want to like climb a mountain just for that reason alone? Like, yep, actually never wanted to before until right now.
I think that's the great kind of like motivator. Like when you talk to somebody who doesn't go outdoors much, it's like, hey, you want to go up Mount Rainier? Like, dude, not really, man. All right, dude, how about this? When we get to the top, We're gonna get drunk.
No, you want to go to the top of Rob Bevere and drink this bottle of whiskey with me?
But like, can't we just drink it now? No, dude, we got to get to the top. No. All right. Okay, yeah.
I promised myself I wouldn't open this unless I was at the top.
As long as it's like Mount Rainier.
Like something. Which mountain? Who's driving?
Yeah, Mount Rainier. Yeah, exactly.
There's some good like ones in Colorado that are like 14ers that you could essentially walk up, you know, like there's still a good like trek or whatever, but you don't have to be an experienced like climber at all.
Well, most of them around here are like that. They're not like there's trails like crazy, like the Olympic.
Yeah, I could. I'm down to walk up a mountain. I'm cool with that.
No, nobody.
That's
nobody,
still tough. You know?
No, I think if somebody were like if serious mountain climbers would not want to bring me along. Like they'd be like, no, dude, you're gonna get us killed. But if there's a trail, nah, that's fine. Yeah, I can handle that.
Man, so like, we got this friend Frank. Man, he still smokes like a pack and a half of Newports a day. Ugh. It's just in his 30s, doesn't take care of himself. But when you go out and do like outdoor activities with him, he is oddly like the most in shape one, and he doesn't work out at all. And so it's like when we went to the sand dunes and we climbed up them and stuff, like we were all dying because we're climbing up the steepest part. And every time you go up, you also sink a little bit down. So it's like you're climbing four times as far, insanely steep, like impossible. And like he's like just ahead of all of us and stuff, taking cigarette breaks and still beating us up there. And we're like, dude, when is this going to catch up to you? And then like I asked some of his coworkers, I guess our coworkers, were doing some things where they were climbing, walking up 14ers and stuff. And like Frank is still crushing it. It's like, what the fuck, man? Is he like one of those people that has that gene where he just isn't going to get lung cancer as long as fines? A guy that like, you know, drank a shot of whiskey and like smoked a pack of cigarettes till he was 105 and still drove himself. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, you don't really hate somebody until you see like if he does make it to 100, like, and you're around, like you're getting up there in age as well, and he's there too, and he's like been able to live his whole life that way, and you didn't, and you're just like, fuck.
Yeah, he's coming to visit me in the nursing home and stuff, and he drove himself there with his like wife that's 30 years younger than him.
Yeah, he's got a trophy wife. He's still smoking cigarettes. He still doesn't work out.
Has survived three other wives.
Fuck. Don't ever come here again.
Yeah, don't ever fucking come here again. But he's the only person that visits me.
Well, you have like when you're in a nursing home, you have no control over it. So he comes to visit you, and you're like, I told the front desk not to let you in. But they're like, oh, he doesn't get visitors very often. I'm sure he didn't mean it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. They never take me seriously.
No. So anyway, maybe we should get back on point, I suppose.
Yeah, this is nice tangents right off the bat.
All right.
You're never getting this back, guys.
All right. First up is we didn't have one last time. We're going to have one this time, an Oumuamua update.
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm always glad that there's new Oumuamua news. I don't know if this is really actually so much like they've discovered new news, but some of it has been represented in this big New Yorker article. I'm sure you've already read it because you're keeping yourself informed, so this might be redundant. I mean, pretty much what just makes this article interesting is just bringing up the fact that if we would have taken this more seriously, we kind of missed an opportunity to study this object more. And I think we're in a situation where we've gotten most of the data that we can off of it. It's too far away and moving too fast for us to really intercept it. And it's probably going to pass through our solar system. It doesn't really seem like it's locked in orbit or anything. So that is, you know, just kind of a missed opportunity, because not only is it the first interstellar object, but there's about six things that are really peculiar about it. And this scientist that is really, like, you know, campaigning that we need to study this more because of the potential for it being, of course, maybe an alien object, but the fact that these unanswered and unique questions are still really, like, relevant in astronomy and just our solar system and everything, regardless of whether it is that type of extraterrestrial intelligent life type probe or something like that. Who the hell knows? That's just fun for us. We definitely think it's aliens, but maybe he's also trying to campaign that in the future, if we ever discover something like this, that the scientific community and the international community should really take it seriously about putting resources to try and study one of these objects more. Because we might be looking for more, maybe if they're insanely rare, probably is, because we track a lot of objects in the solar system just for our own safety. But who knows? With fast radio bursts, as soon as they found one, they thought it was so rare, and then they start looking for them, and then, you know, I don't know how many dozens have been found since the first one in the early 2000s. So this might be one of those situations where, you know, now that there's a lot of press around it and stuff, if we find one, we can intercept it and check it out, what's going on. Might not necessarily be the same thing, of course. That one is obviously an asteroid and doesn't have these six weird things that we're going to go over, so we still missed an opportunity, but... let's just jump into what the weird things are and just start talking about them. One of them is, its shape. And we've talked about it being like a cigar shape or whatever. And now, turns out the way that they kind of figured that out, because we have no visuals of it and stuff, is something about like the way that it spins every 8 hours or something. I don't really know the math or geometry of how they're able to try and figure out what these objects are just based off of small amounts of data. But some of the data could also possibly suggest that it is a pancake-like geometry, which is very interesting. That is not – they did not use the term saucer, that's for sure.
But they wanted – I'm sure like somebody in the room was like, so this is kind of like – saucer geometry.
No, we're before they say word. Saucer, we're this shape is more like word. Pancake. It's pancake. Yes, pancake. Like saucer wasn't even uttered, except for someone that got fired.
Yeah, he's like, get the fuck out right now.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. And the cigar shape thing or whatever, like, it's just because they don't have a lot of data, and I don't really understand even, like, this article oversimplifies what they say. So, the fact that the brightness varies from a factor of 10 as it spins means that it is at least 10 times longer than it is wide. I don't know. That sounds good to me. They probably know the geometry of that. But it says it looks like a cigar in all the photos that they make, but one possibility that they're liking more is that the pancake-like one is definitely favored by a lot of scientists. And I don't know how that type data will reflect that, but that's freaking insane. Now, just think about it. Either way, whether it's cigar shape or pancake shape, we don't have objects in our solar system that are like that. And it's not that, like, I don't know. Of course, randomly, we have ones that look like snowmen and ones that look like all sorts of weird shapes. So the randomness and the infiniteness of the universe says that it doesn't mean it's necessarily intelligent or anything like that, or that it's designed. It's just extremely peculiar. And... here's another thing.
The shininess, I remember that.
Yeah, the shininess.
It's that alone is really messed up, because you think of asteroids or comets, they're just rocks, right? And for something to have, I know shiny is not the technical term, but to have that unique property, it has to be, just think of what, in order for something to be shiny on Earth, like nothing, almost nothing is shiny on Earth. And if it is, it's definitely worth, you know, hey, what is that? Like mercury or metals. But again, we get metals out of ore. So when it's in the earth, and when it's in dirt and rocks and ore, it's not shiny. And glass is, glass does not really occur naturally unless you're in the desert and it's struck by lightning. Even then, it's not that shiny.
There's crazy randomness in the universe, so maybe just the randomness of this coming from somewhere else or whatever. Like, it's also, you know, a bizarre object. And this thing doesn't necessarily support – it kind of goes with its uniqueness and stuff. But one of it is that when you look at all the stars in the vicinity of the sun, they all move relative to the sun, and the sun moves relative to them. But only one in 500 stars in that frame is moving as slow as Oumuamua is. So you'd expect that most rocks would move roughly at the speed of the star they came from, that they're going through it. And if this object came from another star, that star would have to be really special to one in 500 for our local star community to be at that speed. So that's another bizarre thing about it. Doesn't mean that it didn't come from a star, but they could probably figure out, there's a smaller number of stars that it could have come from just based on the speed that it's going. So that's really interesting.
Well, you brought up at the very beginning of this, like the thing that maybe we all missed out, because it's like you don't know what you're missing out on, is that we don't really, unless there is a like national interest or an economic interest in invest in researching something, we won't do it. And
for something that's so brand new, we know about black holes and we know about all this other stuff and asteroids and maybe mining them, all this stuff we've known about for years, we're sending stuff out. We're just now sending stuff out that kind of might be looking for life recently. So like this is just so brand new, so we cannot get everyone mobilized right away. Definitely. We only had a couple years to act on this, and it takes like 10 years to put something up after its conception anyway.
Well, yeah, but we could have been out looking for stuff in general.
Yeah.
Ahead of this, instead of something flying through our neighborhood, and then we decide, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we could research this stuff? Like, well, it's gone now. But like I was remembering that there's been talk of like the raw material, like some of the resources that the Earth does not have, like helium-3, which is apparently the moon has a shit ton of, and has a number of like potentially incredibly useful utilities for all sorts of things. The lander that's on the moon, or I'm sorry, not the moon, Mars. Like, you need somebody to sit there and like explain. And same thing with the Hadron Collider. Like, there's always that person that asks, "Well, why are we spending all this time and resources on this? Like, what's the technology? What's the endpoint?" And most people that are in basic research, they look at you like, "You don't discover things that way." And who knows what we just missed out on? That because we're not looking at non-Earth objects. I mean, the amount of rare earth metals, and we call them rare earth metals, we just call them rare metals and rare elements that are in the asteroid belt, that a lot of science fiction writers already believe that's going to be the basis of the solar economy in a couple centuries, is that a lot of the corporations are basically going to be mining in the asteroid belt for rare materials and elements that you can't get on Earth very easily. And this is all economic stuff, but just think of just knowledge in general of learning about our world and learning about the potential solutions to problems we have right now, because we're dependent on carbon-based energy sources and other such things. Like, what other possibilities are out there? But we're not looking for them because we don't see the potential in front of us. Until we see the potential for profit in front of us, or the national interest in the case of the moon landing, like the national strategic interest, like, we won't do it. And it's a little disappointing that we have the capacity to do it, and who's really pushing space now? It's SpaceX, it's a lot of these private interests, because as a country, and most countries, have just decided it's not worth doing. So it's now up to individuals and collections of people that can see the long term, see maybe call them entrepreneurial or just call them like visionaries who see the possibilities that maybe we need to learn like, hey, how the hell does this shit work before we figure out later on if there's any application or anything that we could derive from it to better the human experience. And I think this Oumuamua thing, like you mentioned, that we're not really going to get much of a chance to take a look at it other than the things you've mentioned. And we have to rely on our limited ability to observe it and research it. But we do know something is really weird about it. But we're just not going to get the chance to really. I mean, we're going to have to wait for the next Oumuamua, basically.
Yeah. And that's and the next one might all of a sudden not have all these other strange things. that's what's exciting. Like, what if we just had something out there that, like, we could just trigger? It's already up orbiting us or orbiting the moon or something, and if, like, it's really fast whenever we need to turn it on, and it can just get up and go and get to something and intercept something. We need a lot of those. just going around the moon, just waiting to be triggered.
Well, the pushback, and this was in the movie First Man with about Neil Armstrong, is whenever they were talking about the moon, the Apollo program, there was always that pushback, like, why are we spending money on this when we could be spending money on things here on Earth? You know, like, there's always somebody that's going to say, hey, we have something going on right now here that we should be spending our resources on, not this, you know, flight of fancy onto the moon. And it's unfortunate. I mean, that's valid, except that's valid to a point, but the NASA budget is not that big.
It's really like, not. And it's not minuscule. It's not like we're going to use that money to, like, solve all of America's problems. We have that extra money to divert towards solving, like, you know, human suffering or Americans' problems or whatever they think, you know, that money should be spent on. That's the other thing. They don't really specify that.
Well, whatever
then all of a sudden you take whatever their agenda
is usually.
Yeah, their agenda or something. Why we spend money on this when we can spend money on defense or this or that. Well, space is important. You know, it's funny. I think, and I don't know if we mentioned this on another show, but you've heard some of the major, like, you know, celebrities in the scientific community not necessarily condemning the idea of a space force because they know advancements in military technology is going to mean advancements in their funding for all sorts of science and stuff too, and they could get next generation, you know, like space propulsion and stuff if it's like military contractors and stuff like that working on it, and they could start using it for their scientific applications. And it's funny, as much as like scientists can, you know, be, you know, fairly benevolent about, you know, the human race and everything, at the same time they could be very calculated realists, and it's like, what would advance science for everything? We can't solve all of the Earth's problems, you know, but we could fucking, like, still keep on bringing, you know, humanity forward at a faster pace. And I thought that was kind of interesting. They didn't take a very they took a more different approach to it, even though they had been bashing a lot of stuff that this administration has been doing. And then they're like, whoa, don't talk shit about a space force. Might be good. Like, that's going to help our field. If our field could get funded and get new technology that, like, you know, and nothing like an arms race is going to propel the technology like that. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, the thing I remember from his Space Force thing, and that a lot of defense, like, analysts push back on, is that if you're going to focus your resources on a Space Force, like, that – you usually are building a force with the objective of defending against something. I mean, with every other branch of our military, we don't just go out and start building weapons. I mean, they come with a design input of what we need out of it. And the problem that I think the pushback, and you're absolutely right, like, if they started spending money on space technology, there often is, like, a trickle effect to other areas and other, like, forms that, you know, if the Defense Department isn't interested in it, it can move into the civilian realm and ends up benefiting everyone. But, like, if you're spending all this money on a space force to defend against what? That is the problem that they always push back. I'm like, look, we're all about defense spending. Don't get us wrong. Like, this is what a lot of Pentagon officials would say, and they have said to him. But they're just like, look, we don't, like, when you tell us to build a space force, defend against what, though? Like, why don't we?
It's offense. It is offense. It is to put any of our enemies into submission, that even if, like, China and Russia wanted to join forces with us or something like that, like, we got, like, things hovering over their country that they cannot shoot at. That are just like, no matter what, no matter how much you wipe us off the face, yeah,
already
no matter.
In place, though. That's already part of our. That's already part of our defense posture.
We don't say that we have weapons up there, though. And also, what's really ridiculous about this is, how come we never talk about the fact that we have, like, a space treaty from back in the 60s or 70s that most of the nations in the world have signed or whatever and stuff about not putting weapons in space, and that the only ones that are up there are, like, top secret ones that we can't admit to.
We all know about how our president feels about treaties. So
yeah. That's something that's not talked about enough, and it's like, well, we all kind of agreed not to put weapons in space, and even though we might have top secret experimental ones, like, I think it might be good not to start a space arms race. Just me.
Yeah, and
if it's not, if we're just having a secret one, I think we should just keep it that way.
And the annual budget for NASA is $20 billion as of 2018, and that's about 0.5% of the federal budget. So, and I'm sure it was a bigger percentage of the budget back in the 60s and 70s, but, like, just consider this, like, you could double the budget of NASA and you'd still be at 1% of the federal budget of everything they spend. So, and also, and like we were saying, like, the idea that if you put this money towards another like problem that you could just solve it. Like $20 billion, like nowadays, if all it took to solve hunger was $20 billion, we would have done it a long time ago. It's not a matter of $20 billion.
No, it's not. Nothing. None of it is, and neither is our defense.
No,
you know what's that? Not. What's that like? An aircraft carrier and a quarter.
Yeah, that's like you could build a few aircraft carriers, but you couldn't operate them for very long.
No, you could not. Oh, that's ridiculous. Yeah, you couldn't fill it up with planes with $20 billion. Like, you just have an empty aircraft carrier, maybe with some fuel.
You could drive around an empty aircraft carrier for a while on $20 billion, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. All right, so, I mean, anyway, back to Oumuamua. I don't know if I had too many other ones. I think there was some other cool... Oh, yeah, one of the other really interesting things is it has, like, this weird push in its spin that they can't figure out. And the only way that, like, things usually have this is when they're expelling gas from, like, getting close to the sun. But they can't detect any sort of comet trail or anything like that. So they're wondering what that is. And that's creepy because then they're like, what if it's artificial means? What if it is, like, a propulsion type thing? But, I mean, it has a weird trajectory. So, like, I don't know why it would choose to do that on purpose. But it's still just an awesome, cool... peculiar thing. And then when they start talking about the shape of it being really long and flat, then they start thinking about, like, what if it was like some sort of solar sail type technology or something that's just kind of, you know, floating around like all fucked up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still hold to the theory that the way they thought it was originally flipping around is that it could very easily be a derelict ship that because when you get knocked, when something gets knocked and starts spinning in space, it's going to keep spinning forever. Like, there's nothing, because there's no inertial, there is no force or inertial pressure to slow down the spin. If you're on Earth and you spin something, eventually it's going to stop spinning. In space, it can just keep going on forever. So I think, like, it might have been something that was involved. It could be a piece of technology that was blown off something and is spinning in this weird way, and it will continue to spin this way and all the way through the solar system. And I mean, that's the kind of thing about, like, space in general, is that once something begins on a certain spin, whether it's on one axis or another, there, unless you have some sort of countervailing force to stop it, it's going to keep spinning that way in, like, mm-hmm. perpetuity. And the biggest example of this is in the movie Gravity, when Sandra Bullock's character gets knocked off the shuttle, and she's mm-hmm. and she's flipping head over foot, mm-hmm. and it's making everyone in the theater dizzy.
Yep.
And everything, and she just keeps spinning. And you're like, well, how does she stop? There is no way to stop. There's nothing to grab onto.
It's a maddening.
You can't swim in space. You can't hold your hands up and kind of wad yourself to sleep. She's going to keep spinning forever until George Clooney came and saved her. So, like...
That movie was incredible.
Yeah,
It was the most delightful piece of bullshit. Like, it was, like, really well thought out, then really ridiculous, and it was still fantastic.
I loved it. Another
one of, like, those, like The Martian or something, where technical engineers like it, but then someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson can watch it and still ruins parts of it for you and be like, fuck you, Neil.
He makes a living off that. It's amazing.
Oh, it's great. It's great, though. It's funny.
Well, I haven't listened to his podcast in a while, but his podcast is based, I mean, it has a lot of commercials. And if I could talk to Neil, I could be like, dude, can you step back on the commercials on your damn podcast? I want more Neil.
Tell me your commercials, please, like, go to something or whatever, not just in your pocket or something like that. Like, you guys, I don't know, fund science somewhere. It's like, paying me is funding science.
I always love, like, when somebody, like, whether it's Neil deGrasse Tyson or Bill Nye the Science Guy or Steve Irwin, when they're a media personality and they're charismatic and they just love, like, bringing something to everyone else's attention and trying to get them interested in it and passionate about it. When that's what they're doing, I can forgive, like, some of their capitalist motivations.
Yeah, because ultimately it's better than other entertainers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's better than Taylor Swift, who's basically just trying to put money in her pocket. There's nothing of any social value coming out of her music. And I will defend that. So if anyone else sends me an angry email about that shit, I will defend that.
Hey, Neil. Taylor Swift is perfect, okay? She is flawless in every way, And you deserve any hate mail you get.
She's a national treasure.
Yeah, she is a national treasure.
I forget, like, and what was the, he did it with Seth MacFarlane, The Cosmos. It's only one season and it's on Netflix and it's awesome.
Yeah,
and they were talking about
maybe it's coming back. I think it's coming back.
They said they wanted to do it, and Seth and Neil both wanted to do it because they got a lot of fan mail. They're like, "Can you do more of that? I love that shit. Do more of that. Stop doing the other stuff and like another Cosmos. Like he has about 6 shows on Netflix that you can look up. I mean, Neil's been busy, but for whatever reason, the show
it's returning on National Geographic and Fox for season 2.
Awesome.
I don't know when, though. This is an article from July on Den of Geek.
The other thing they I love about, I don't know why, but this show in particular compared to other Neil deGrasse Tyson shows, I love. I don't know. I can't really explain why.
March 9th. March 4th. March 4th.
Well, which is it?
The first episode's March 4th. Sorry. I just read that it was 2019, and I got confused and excited and
Are you sure? Are you sure you're not drinking? Because I am.
No, it's the caffeine. I'm sure.
Too much of that yerba mate. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad I got this down, like man. This motorized stand up desk. I don't know if you guys could hear it there.
Yep, I can hear it.
So my caffeinated induced, ADHD and stuff is standing up and sitting down. Works out perfect with this thing. I highly recommend getting one. For mine, looks like a big iPhone.
There are they don't have the table, but they have like those desks that elevate, so you can stand and work.
That's what this is.
Yeah, I know, but yours has a bunch of extra other things too, though.
Yeah, it's like a dry erase board on the surface, and like it's got a drawer and like USB ports to charge your stuff, and like it's this whole awesome thing. I recommend getting one. It is the future of desk technology. If you're a nerd, there's nothing like getting a new awesome desk, and I fucking love this one.
Wow. I feel like I kind of want to go on this tangent for a while, but we should probably stop.
Yeah, you're right. It's not an interesting one. It's not.
All right, well, anyway, I guess maybe to sum this up about Oumuamua, and the reason that we get like excited about this is that it's something we don't know much about and we'd like to know more, and the only way to know more about these things is to be in a position to actually investigate and research. And it's so easy when you don't see the benefit in front of you to kind of like, oh, we don't need to do that. You know, we need more. We have more important day-to-day things to worry about. And I feel like that notion, which is mostly, it's legitimate, but I think sometimes when you have to think about the dollar amount and the minuscule amount of money and time, and there are plenty of people that are dying to do this stuff, and they will almost work for free. I kind of feel like at some point
Think about it. If we intercepted it was an alien ship. It's decommissioned. It has been for a long time, but we get so much cool technology.
Whew. Seriously, cloning machines, like.
We could reverse engineer whatever propulsion system they were probably using before.
Yeah, I mean they have a file like somewhere in like the daycare center that's labeled cure for cancer. You know, I mean, who knows? Like, what kind of shit they have in there? It's an alien daycare center cure for cancer.
Pictures of us from like the Egyptian age, ancient aliens coming. They were gonna come back,
but something got
fucked up along the way. I'm saying it's ancient aliens.
It's pictures of them. Like, they actually have photos of them arm in arm with Ramses. Ramses the Great.
Absolutely.
They're like, what the fuck? That was real? Ancient aliens was true? It's like
hieroglyphs make so much more sense now. We're finally able to decode all of them. Booyah. that would be so cool.
Well, I guess speaking, you mentioned Space Force, and I'll bring this up. A few quick hitters on some nerd news on the entertainment side of it. Steve Carell is going to star in a new show that is basically going to be a parody of Trump's idea of a space force.
Oh my God, Steve Carell?
Yes.
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 Oh my God. What is this called?
I don't know if it has a finalized title yet, but it was mentioned that Steve Carell and some of the creators, these are some big hitters in the comedy world, And
it's called Space Force. It's called Space Force.
I mean, yes. That's what I would do. But
it's called Space Force. There's a video on IMDb. I don't know how long he doesn't watch it right now.
The article I read said they were going to be lampooning Trump's idea for Space Force, but I didn't actually read that the name of the show was Space Force. But that makes sense. Why wouldn't you?
The goal is to defend satellites from attack and perform other space-related tasks. Oh, my God. or something.
Other space-related tasks. Yeah. They can't even specify.
This is the story of the men and women who have to figure it out. From the guy who brought you The Office. This is amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, Greg Daniels and Steve Carell are the creators, starring Steve. Oh, my God, I'm really... It's awesome how fast some stuff could get greenlit and just
Space
like
Force.
Just be in our life.
I love
Space
that.
Force.
I love that music video those guys made. Guys, I think it's no. What is it called? Songify This, and they did a song about Space Force where they auto-tuned Donald Trump's voice, and it is a great song.
Dude, they had I think they had the 2001 Space Odyssey like song or something like that. Like, I don't know, on the clip that I just watched, like, use the soundbite in this. As I'm going through and reading all that stuff, you'll be able to figure it out and line it up. It's hilarious.
So I knew you'd get excited about that. I'm excited about that.
Oh, that's going to be incredible. Okay, let's see if this has a date yet. Details. No, there's no episode list or anything yet. Oh, my God. Yeah, workplace comedy inspired by President Donald Trump's idea to create a sixth branch of the military, the Space Force. Oh, my God, man. This is incredible. This is incredible.
Oh,
I'm going to be hooked on this thing. I'm going to watch it every time it airs. We could have shows about it or just little updates and recaps. Like, this is good stuff. There's a lot of like awesome things all converging at the same time.
Oh man, this is, I mean, I would have greenlit it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
Steve Carell has like a workplace comedy about Space Force. Like, yeah, green.
No, we want that back. Dude. We want that. Like, you're telling me Steve Carell wants to do The Office in space. Yes. Yes, yes.
I know, he's probably sitting there like, don't you want to read the script? I don't need to read the fucking script. No. Great, go.
I prefer there's no script. I never want to see anything. I'm going to watch the show live like other fans. I'll be 100% hands off.
Look, Steve, here's a check, Steve. I'm not, you go ahead and write a number in it, and I will pay.
No oversight whatsoever.
None at all.
Just hit your deadline so I can watch it.
I've already told our legal department hands off, so go ahead. But yeah, that was one. The other kind of thing I mentioned, because I mean, Dune is one of my three or four favorite sci-fi novels of all time, possibly still number one. The movie that's going to be directed by Denis Villeneuve, who did Blade Runner 2049, and he also did The Arrival, they announced that David Bautista will be part of the cast. So Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy will be in Dune, and he will be playing the monster Rabat. So
he's got a big role.
No, it's not. It's
okay, because I like him, but he ruins movies, and I don't know how. I'm sorry,
really?
I like the guy. I think he's funny, but he's just been in so many really bad movies. He doesn't necessarily ruin himself. He has just agreed to be in a lot of bad movies, so I hope this is well done. I always like him, but he is he's made some questionable career choices.
Him and Nicolas Cage and Gerard Butler all need to, you know, maybe get a new agent. But he is going to be Rabat, which is not a big role. He's basically the younger brother of the Harkonnens, and so he's like he's basically the brute idiot who controls Arrakis before he's kicked off. So he's, you know, I think this is actually a very good role for him, because that's when I think of Rabat, I do think that Batista, or I think of him as a wrestler. I do think of him as a big brooding wrestler. So I feel like that's actually a pretty good role for him. The other role that I didn't know about this, but I guess they've already decided they've already picked their Paul Atreides, and it is going to be an Academy not award nominated actor that has a ridiculous resume. Let me see if I can... Timothy I don't know how to pronounce it. Chalamet or Chalamet. He's British. He's been in a ton of movies. He has a definite, like, award-winning pedigree, but he will be Muad'Dib / Paul Atreides. So that is the two... Those are the two things that have been announced so far. And it's just... I'm excited for it because I feel like... I mean, the story... And the movie is only going to cover the first half of the book. It's not going to cover.
Oh, are they going to just? Are they going to make a lot of them? They better. They and just make it a big long thing so they can cover everything, like Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings tries to, or something like that. If they really committed to it like that, that would be insane. I just got excited because sometimes I try to hold suspense or whatever because I just hear from all the other Dune readers that none of the movies or books really quite did it right and everything, and that they might screw it up or something. But if they really were in it for the long haul and did it right, like some of these other franchises have been able to, that could be really exciting.
There's a few other. All right, there's a few other. Lady Jessica will be played by Rebecca Ferguson, who is another one of those like names you probably don't know that well, but she has been in some great movies as supporting cast. Stellan Skarsgård, you know who he is. He is the serial killer from Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He is the scientist from the Thor movies. I mean, he's been in like you know who he is. He's been in like 500 movies, and if you saw his face, you know exactly who he is. Stellan Skarsgård, who is from Stockholm, Sweden, is going to be Baron Harkonnen.
Oh, what? This guy's awesome.
He has been... All right, yeah. Nymphomaniac, Amistad. Let's see. Avengers, Age of Ultron, of course. The Thor movies. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Let's keep going back. He's been in a bunch of Entourage episodes.
Oh, so a nice little thing to bring back what we were talking about before. This Timothy Chalamet or whatever.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift actually said, like, oh my God, she was crushing hard on him, and she's like 7-8 years older. She had to, like, take herself back.
Well, if Taylor Swift said that, then, you know, and she's a national treasure.
She's a national treasure, and the national treasure has a crush on this guy, which makes him by default a national treasure. So.
Yes. So yeah, by
the transitive laws
by the transitive property.
As Nick Cage, he would tell you the same thing.
Oh man, let's see. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the other thing. Stellan's bit. He's in Mamma Mia. If you like musicals, let's see. Good Will Hunting, Insomnia.
That was a good flick.
Yeah, surprising. Yeah, Hunt for Red October.
Oh my God, yes.
He's Tupolev. He's Captain Tupolev in Hunt for Red October. If you don't know who that is, then you're just not really an American. But, all right.
We need to spend a day binge watching old war movies like Patton and Hunt for the Red October, drinking scotch and eating steak like all day. Maybe some cigars or some pipe tobacco.
I remember I did that one Christmas Eve. Like once we were done doing the Christmas family stuff, we went downstairs. We watched Die Hard, Mad Max, and Hunt for Red October. Like just a bunch of guy movies, drinking scotch. And I am totally in favor of that because I remember when Hunt for Red October was on TNT all the time. Every time it was on, I would be like, all right, I'm going to stop and watch this.
Yeah, no matter what point in the movie it was, you're just like, let's go, let's do this.
It doesn't matter. I've seen the movie 400 times, I'll watch it again. Same with Die Hard. I've seen the movie 400 times, I'll watch it again.
Ah, Die Hard. Dude, so did you see that one like parody, like Die Hard parody thing that was done by the guys from Workaholics I told you to watch?
No, I don't.
Oh my God, hold on.
Was it like Everything Wrong with Die Hard?
No, it was... So they just made a comedy action movie. Hold on. Let me get the name of this freaking movie. The Workaholics guy made a movie that's basically Die Hard with Shaggy. Okay, let me find the name of this freaking movie, though. We watched it on Netflix. It's on Netflix. It's freaking fantastic. It's called Game Over, Man. Game Over, comma, Man. and it's the guys from Workaholics, and they get into a Die Hard-like situation in a freaking high-rise while they're working all together, and hilarity ensues, and it's totally worth it. It's everything you want it to be, and more. So I highly recommend it. It's super dumb. But not that the first Die Hard was, you know, the most intelligent movie ever, so... doesn't really matter, but this movie Game Over Man is definitely hilarious. It was a lot of fun. I did say at the end of one of our episodes recently to go watch The Package. I don't know if you have yet, but that is like, I don't know, because we had a lot of raunchy like teen coming of age, like going over the line type movies, and like, you know, we always thought how are like the next generation really gonna top us and stuff, and they did in an awesome way. I gotta give them credit for it. You know, I'm not gonna be a cranky old man and say that we did it first or we did it better. Like, I gotta give props to this cast and like this movie for being a raunchy coming of age like teen comedy. Like, they outdid some stuff for sure. They crossed some lines and stuff. They were just more creative. I gotta give them props. I mean, we laid the foundation for it. They had to one up us, you know. So like, we set the bar, and they had to cross it. It's good for them.
And I heard, well, Netflix is going to increase their prices, and
it's worth it because of all their original content.
Exactly.
They're doing. I'm like, all right, I'll pay $20 a month for it.
I'm not like, they're going from like what, $10 to $12 a month. I want to know who the fuck is complaining about that.
Yeah.
What is your problem? Do you realize like how much original content we're getting from them?
And all
this classic. I mean, I've been watching Monty Python like for the last 3 weeks. Classic Monty Python, because it's all on Netflix. And I'm like, dude, I would pay $10 a month for that by itself.
Seriously. Like, to get, like, there's, like, an SNL pass or something that's, like $19 a month to be able to stream every SNL, like, episode whenever. And also, like, I think you could, like, search out sketches and stuff like that, you know, and they're all, like, sliced up and everything. Like, I would love that because I just love referencing it. And I do want to write a thesis at some point that I think like there's about a, you know, up and down curve of every 7 years that it takes for Lorne Michaels to get another great cast together. And roughly I want to study how long they generally last and stuff, because there is a little bit of a sliding scale in that. But essentially it just involves me sitting down and watching a ridiculous amount of Saturday Night Live and writing a really large paper just essentially for myself. I can't turn it into anyone, but it's going to be like a dissertation.
That sounds like a terrible process of
it's great. It's going to be a great life. I'm going to sit around and watch way too much SNL. It's going to be like in the movie PCU, where that guy sat down to watch TV all the time for his like thesis for college.
I feel like you're going to seclude yourself in some remote location that has Wi-Fi access because you're going to stream it all, and your sole objective while you're there is this SNL thesis. And we're not going to hear from you for like, you know, months.
I think that's fair. I think it'll take a few months. I really do. Exactly, you know, and just the pure math of watching and going through it all once and writing notes and trying to like, you know, back it up. But then I have to go back and see, you know, what it supports, and then, you know, try and get as much of the statistical data as far as ratings go. And you know, I'll have a couple other ones.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you gotta.
I think it's the 7 year cycle, but the main point is to find the cycle and just to prove that it exists. It doesn't necessarily have to be 7 years. That's just my initial theory, but I might find something a little bit different. But I just do want to prove that the cycle exists, you know, because like big people quit. Just like a greatest example, the most abrupt one is with Will Ferrell, and some other people left, and they had to pick up the pieces and figure out how to be funny again without him. You know, and it's a writer's thing, it's a cast thing, and it's also just when you get a new cast, how long it takes for them to get chemistry together and stuff. And I think, honestly, one of the best casts of all time were in the mid-2000s, the Bill Hader, Kristen Wiig, Andy Samberg, Fred Armisen years. A lot of those were probably some of the absolute best years. And it's not from my generation SNL. It's not. But after rewatching a lot of them, and I wasn't watching SNL a lot those years, so a lot of those years slipped past me, and I had to rewatch reruns later. And it's like, these might be some of the best years that the show had, and one of the best casts.
Their downswing was the very late 90s and early 2000s, and they did not really get back onto their game until like because I remember watching when they first started introducing like five or six new cast members, and they're cast members that ended up becoming, you know, later favorites, but the out but the early product was not that good. And it did take them a couple of years to develop that chemistry. So, like, when Molly Shannon, Sherry O'Terry, Will Ferrell, and a lot of them joined the cast after Farley, Mike Myers, and Sandler, and a lot of them left in 95. So, like, there was, like, a definite decline in, like, 97, 98, 99, and then there was a low, and then it did. It definitely popped out. And now, like, just their ability now to definitely one of their heights right now.
I think they're doing a good job, because what Lauren has been trying to do, I feel like, is before it used to be find the best comedians because they could write and they're also funny. But now I think it's kind of, even though he'll still have that for younger people to get their type of humor and influence, people like Pete Davidson or whatever that can write a lot of their own stuff and digital shorts and own sketches and everything, it's mostly about having like really versatile thespians that are hilarious, that could do a lot of different stuff. And in the 90s, not a lot of those people were. There's only one or two real good impressionists, and most of the other ones kind of sucked. But they was okay because it was funny, and they didn't have to be great. If they're bad impressions, they're almost more offensive or more funny. But that was our standard then. But now, like, you know, hiring people like Jay Farrow and stuff, and like even Kristen Wiig, or like who's it, Kate McKinnon right now, like, you know, just Lauren over these years really trying to hire these people that are just really talented and versatile all around to do a lot of stuff that the writers want them to, as well as bringing their own stuff to the table. And I think that's what he kind of hires a little bit more now. And there are some of them that I think are hired to be co-writers and stuff and to help. You know, some of the younger ones, like, that'll pull off a YouTube or off of like the new circuit that were no names that they make huge or something. I think it's Lauren trying to be like, well, we still need millennials to get this humor because we're aging, you know, like in the right. But I'm sure they keep the writer's room young as well, too. So that's what I've kind of noticed. And I got to give them props for it, even though I could love my heyday and some of my funniest ones, like just watching them with Jesse. And it's not the ones that she grew up with. And she's like, it's not as funny to me. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Like, humor has evolved. And like a lot of the cast members have been getting more and more talented.
Yeah, I watched I didn't realize like how much of Saturday Night Live, like the pipeline came from the Second City.
Oh yeah.
So a lot of them were Chicago. A lot of them were Midwesterners. Like they were.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd.
That was perfect for us, man. Yeah, we didn't even know. We just thought that was the humor from everything. Like,
I think that's why we attached it really quickly, because Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, Chris Farley, Mike Myers. A lot of them, if they're not from the Midwest, they spent a lot of time in the Midwest, and a lot of the
when their careers started, they came from wherever they were from, and they had to like pay their dues in Chicago.
And Bill, you know? I mean, Bill Murray is a Chicagoan, so like some of them are from the region. Others moved there and worked at Second City in Illinois, in Chicago, Illinois, at that comedy troupe and at the improv school, and that's how they got their start. So like a lot of it was like a pipeline from Chicago straight to New York, and they got onto Saturday Night Live. That's no longer the pipe. That's just one of three or four or five sources now they have for comedians. And I think that's why they're much better now than they used to be. Because if you look at a traditional episode or a common episode of SNL in 1991, like there's things in there that would not fly now. Not because it's not funny, but because it's not like the joke is. Well, I guess it does mean it's not funny, but like, it's just not, we've moved past it. It's no longer something that we recognize as something in society that we can satirize. And if you can't, like, and that's what a lot of it is. A lot of it was topic based and satire and topical. If there's things that were going on in that area that are not going on anymore. So it's no longer funny or relevant because we don't get it. We're like, well, that was a thing in 89. It isn't now. So now it's not funny, but like other things have carried over, like the, you know, Chris Farley, everything he's done is funny until the end of time, but it's...
until the end of time. I love it.
Absolutely. I challenge anyone to watch that motivational speaker sketch and not laugh. It is... the Rolling Stone had a top 25 SNL sketches of all time.
I think it was like 50 or 100 or something
right,
like
that. 50. That's right, it was 50. Yeah. Number one was Matt Foley, motivational speaker.
And my God, it's so good. I have a T-shirt with him on it and stuff. Like,
when they first had that sketch, I swear to God, there's probably people across America pissing their pants. is the funniest fucking thing you'll ever see.
Yeah, dad got me that shirt. Matt Foley got it. All right. So, Star Trek update. Hit me.
All right. First one, Star Trek. I'm not watching the show anymore as a matter of protest to the first season. Star Trek Discovery has returned. And the reviews and what the producers are all saying is that we're not doing what we did in the first season. We're trying to change. We're trying to demonstrate. But they have Spock, they have Captain Pike, and they're basically playing off nostalgia to the original show. And they're trying not to rewrite canon or rewrite the original storyline, which is what they got in trouble for in the first season. So to me, this is a TV show desperately trying to fix itself, and I just don't give a shit.
You know, it's so funny the way that they're coming to the community and stuff. It's like they're like, you know, trying to come back from like sexual harassment or something like that.
It's
like trying to grow. We're trying to change. We're trying to better ourselves. We're not perfect, you know, and we're not sure if you know, we're not asking for your forgiveness whenever you're ready. Just want you to know we're trying to change.
Yeah. Tuesday nights at 8 or whatever the time
is. That would be great.
But then you
are like, you know, just somebody else in like protest or whatever. It's like, no, there's a huge principle around this. It doesn't matter. The damage is done. It's unforgivable. And I'm just not trying to hear it. And, you know, I don't think society should forgive you.
No. Yeah. Discovery's dead to me. But that is only one Star Trek TV show. CBS and the people behind this do want to put out more. And the one that I am very excited about that is coming in probably early 2020 is the one with Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Patrick Stewart. And the news coming from that is that they are not... First of all, I think I've already said this in previous shows. They are not following the Discovery model. They are doing their own show. They are not attempting to tie it into anything else that CBS is doing. It's going to be its own unique product, and that Patrick Stewart is in the writing room and is actually trying to influence... and have a role in how the show is. And I think this is the thing that has stopped him from coming back to Star Trek, is that it was his past, and he's an actor. He's not really a writer. He's not a content producer. He's a performer.
I picture him coming in some like, you know, like weird like Hamlet costume or some like, you know, Shakespearean time era or something like that, and just insanely mid-Atlantic and digitified. Just so ridiculously over ornate.
But he's not. That's the funny thing. Like, in real life, he's a mess. Like, he admits it. Like, everyone like thinks he's Picard. And I remember during his big interview with Lipton, and like the biggest thing that people don't realize about Patrick Stewart is like they figure because he's Picard that he has his shit in order. He's a leader. He's inspirational. He's like, in real life, he's a fucking mess. He cannot keep track of shit, and he's like really hilarious about it. He's a full-on performer, but I think as he's gotten older, and I think what he got convinced to do this because they said we know audiences see you as Picard. You are Picard. We're not gonna recast Picard. And so that means that not only are we want you back to play the character, we want you to have a role in how it's being rolled out. So he does have a role.
Well, and it's his legacy and stuff too. So say like you could come in and be involved, and you have like control over like, you know, continuing your legacy because he gave it up a long time ago. Oh man, this is fantastic. This is another good news nerd bliss. I know we've mentioned in other episodes, but this is just really exciting.
And they're isolating themselves from the other Star Trek properties, so this is going to be its own thing. The other thing I did learn is that the events, it's going to take place after, it's going to take place like really far in the timeline. So it's going to be after Romulus has been destroyed. So if you remember from the Star Trek movie with Chris Pine, Spock talks about trying to save Romulus from a supernova. Now, they're writing this story with the assumption that that did happen. They're going to ignore the alternate Kelvin timeline, you know, with everything that happens in the movies, but that timeline. But they are going to accept that particular item that Spock and Picard were on a desperate mission to save Romulus, and Romulus was destroyed, and the Romulan Empire is starting to fall apart as a result. So they are going to accept that as part of the premise of the show, but not, you know, not the rest of the stuff that happens in the Chris Pine movies. I thought that was curious that they are they're acknowledging something that, because frankly, a lot of people are, some people like the Kelvin timeline, some people like, I do like the new movies, I love the casting. I think the last two movies were pretty inferior, but I did not, I was not against them rebooting it, but I just feel like they don't really understand Star Trek, and they shouldn't be making movies as a result. But I always, I love the idea.
I love that condescending observation is awesome.
They don't get it.
No, I agree with you completely. I just really like how you put that.
And I'm glad that their fourth movie's falling apart. I'm happy. Like, cause they don't get it. They get the director of a Fast and Furious movie to direct their new movie, and they get writers from these action films that don't know jack shit about Star Trek. And then they wonder why their movies bomb. So I am glad. I'm not upset that the reboot in general, at the concept in general, but the way that it was executed, I'm totally against. But this is I'm optimistic about this because it looks like this is being executed in a different way. It's in the hands of people that love the source material. And the news coming out of that show, I mean, we're still a good ways away from its premiere, but I'm glad that Discovery is not going to be the only Star Trek TV show out there.
I say take their time, don't rush it. We've waited this long anyway, so I know I'm excited and I want to see it as soon as possible, but another part of me is all like, take your time, guys. Do it right.
Do it right. And make sure you have Star Trek nerds in the room and not a bunch of CBS executives that don't even like science fiction. Because that's exactly how Discovery came about. And they had to, like, less... And you'll read about the person who is at CBS that greenlighted the Star Trek Discovery. It's Les Moonves, who got fired for sexual harassment, among other things, and is suing CBS to try and get his $120 million golden parachute payment. So, and he was known... In addition to being a pig, he was known to not like science fiction. He did not like it, and yet that guy was at the head of the new Star Trek TV show.
Sleazeball.
If you have people that don't love what they're working on, they're going to produce crap.
So, like, what happened in, like, the electronic dance music scene, I know this is kind of off topic, but this one executive of this company, SFX Entertainment, started to buy up all these underground electronic music companies, production companies, record labels and stuff here in America, because it had been underground in America until very recently. So somebody who openly, even on the cover of Rolling Stones, like, I think he had, like, I don't know, something on him said fuck it or some shit like that, like, this guy looked like the classic bad guy, and he pretty much said, like, I want to acquire the entire electronic dance music scene in America. And he's like, and I don't care to understand it or I don't like it or anything. And essentially what happened is he overpaid for everything. Everybody in the electronic music scene actually has a little bit of values in what the scene represents and everything. And he completely imploded on himself and declared bankruptcy. It's awesome. because he bought a bunch of companies and we're like, man, like our awesome little niche music scene and everything that was underground and great and ours and we owned it and stuff is getting bought up by big media that literally is quoted on the cover of Rolling Magazine that they don't give a shit. And so it's like, dude, the scene fought back. And one guy that really held out is the head of Insomniac, one of the best like electronic music American companies and franchises for production, music, everything. Their shows are insane and next level. Insomniac, the guy's like, he's already had more money in anything than he'd ever want. So no matter what, if he bought it, like there's nothing he could offer him that he couldn't still keep for himself. So he just held out and kept the company. And it kept, like, one part of, like, America's electronic music scene still very pure as that thing fizzled out. And now it's still a little bit better. It's petering out, and it still has a huge independent touch to it. But, Insomniac holding out, that was definitely pretty awesome to see.
Nice. So sometimes there is a happy ending.
Yeah, there really is. And their shows are amazing. Go see Insomniac events. They're insane.
Awesome. Well... We're reaching the end of the hour as promised.
That was a nice balance of weird tangents that don't really connect. I mean, except for how we got to them.
Yeah.
So, that was great. I think we accomplished shit.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I feel a sense of satisfaction walking away from this one.
Yeah, oddly, you know.
I shouldn't.
Undeserved self respect.
Well, Let's see. So what do you got going on as the week goes forward? You got any weird, awkward, and or uncomfortable things to share before we move on, before we say goodbye to everybody?